Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Filibuster here on the Nerd Party Network, Max. Joining me in the red corner with his atomic breath is Dallas King.
I don't know whether I feel rather offended by that. That you can smell it all the way virtually across in the pod booth.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I'm in the blue corner with my big hairy ape bum. So I'm Lee Hutchison, and in this week's episode we're looking at the latest kind of blockbuster, and a bit of a blockbuster at the cinema, Godzilla vs. Kong. So this has been a long-awaited project. It was announced all the way back in 2015. Adam Wingard, the director, was announced in May 2017. The film was shot in November 2018 and finished in 2019. Should have been out last November. And then in that meantime, we were sort of hit by a global pandemic. HBO Max came along. Warner Brothers blew up the theatrical window. And it's been a bit of a kind of crazy ride since. So it was released internationally on March 24th and in the United States on March 31st, and was also released in theatres, which is a word we've not said in quite a
what
while.
What are they again?
And on HBO Max. Places where we eat popcorn and play on our phones.
Ah, of course.
And yeah, and the film was, to put it lightly, a huge success. It's grossed $285 million at the cinema so far, the most of any film sort of since COVID has come down. So I think we can dispel the myth that people aren't keen to return to the cinema if they feel safe and hopefully vaccinated. But it'll be interesting to see how things come in the UK when we hopefully return to cinemas on May 17th. So Dallas, it's safe to say this has been a long-awaited release. How did you watch the film, and did you revisit any of the previous movies before it?
I didn't revisit any of the previous movies before it. I think I was too busy rewatching another blockbuster saga in advance of another upcoming episode, which will remain secret for now. But I could kind of remember them well enough that I was pretty sure that I did not really need to revisit them ahead of what is essentially was billed as a movie where a giant lizard and a giant ape hit each other a lot. And I'm happy to say that on that respect, it certainly delivered. So, I didn't revisit any of the other ones. I remember I liked Gareth Edwards' take on Godzilla. I mean, I think the best aspect of it was certainly Bryan Cranston's storyline, and that kind of got curtailed quite early on in the film. I think a lot of the films, I think when it comes to the sort of the marketing stuff like that, you know, they're quite cagey about what they show and what they don't show. So, I mean, Bryan Cranston was certainly billed as the lead character of that movie and then turned out not to be. But then I guess some people would argue that the main characters of these movies are not the humans, they're the monsters. Kong Skull Island, I saw that twice, once at the cinema in France that did not have any English subtitles, but I was able to follow the plot. Again, say what you want about the plot for that one. And then Godzilla King of the Monsters, I think I look back at my Letterboxd ratings for that one and I rated it as 1 star and definitely one of the worst movies I'd seen in 2019. I think it was just awful, and I think one of the biggest disappointments was just how murky the cinematography was. You couldn't really see the creatures going at it, and that is again something which has clearly been rectified for this movie. And this is the first movie I actually have to say that I splurged out. I guess it was just after payday, so I could with premium video on demand, so I was able to watch it from the comfort of my own home on my 32-inch TV. But it's safe to say that I would have certainly like to have experienced it on a larger screen, but I'm certainly glad I did not have to watch it on my phone or my laptop, because I think my enjoyment of it would have been impacted quite greatly by that as well. What about yourself?
No, I didn't revisit them either. There's not much to really revisit, is there?
Yeah.
I really like the Gareth Edwards Godzilla. I know it has its detractors, but I think it's a really solid film. I thought it was a really good version of sort of a Western Godzilla movie where it was grounded in some kind of reality. It had its detractors for, oh, we barely saw anything. You know, it was constantly tease. But I think that kind of works quite well for the character. And yeah, I found it really interesting. I like the Bryan Cranston sort of twist that he leaves quite early on in the film. And while I don't think sort of Aaron Taylor-Johnson and, oh, her name's Elizabeth completely escaped Olsen. Me. Elizabeth Olsen.
Yes, the Maximoff twins.
Yeah, they went from one movie to the other in the space of a summer. But I was kind of like happy enough with that. I thought it was interesting. I mean, I think the Halo dive sequence really, really stood out for me. And I thought it was great because, you know, I'm a bit mixed on Rogue One, but I really enjoyed Gareth Edwards' monster. And he seemed like the perfect person for a Godzilla movie. And I think he did all the right things.
Yeah, I think if anyone was disappointed by the lack of Godzilla in the Godzilla movie, I'd hate to see what happens if they ever watch Jaws.
Yes. Because then I'd seen Kong Skull Island in the IMAX. It was fine. You know, I was hoping a bit more from that cast. And I somehow never got round to seeing Godzilla King of the Monsters. Like, I think I had a bit of a come to Jesus moment where I think I spent a good few weeks trying to psych myself up to go see this movie where I thought the trailer looked really bad. There was just nothing about it that appealed to me. And I often feel like I'm obliged to go see these films to check them out. And I didn't. I just could not get myself into the cinema. I was like, you know what? I am not going to go see Godzilla King of the Monsters at the cinema. But it was one of the first films I decided when lockdown kicked in all the way about 13 months ago. I was like, you know what? I'm going to catch up with some films I didn't get the chance to see. I'll watch Godzilla King of the Monsters. I rented that one for a few bucks. And it was dreadful. It was just basically like watching a video game. It was just, you know, terrible cinematography, just things hitting each other, noise, dreadful. And it really put me off the idea of this kind of Godzilla versus Kong kind of movie coming in. So I went in with pretty low expectations last week. But what were your expectations going in? Because they might have been a bit higher after spending that bit of money to rent something like that.
I mean, I'm not sure if my expectations were high. I mean, the trailer did a good enough job of selling the concept of, yes, this is Godzilla and King Kong going at it finally. I mean, I think the trailers actually did a good job of not really giving away much of the storyline and stuff like that. You know, it's basically just focusing on a couple of key sequences, but they managed to still flesh out a sort of 2-minute old trailer for that one. But I mean, you know, the trailers didn't spoil the film. I mean, certain other things spoil the film, such as certain toy companies releasing toys featuring a certain third character, which sort of comes into the mix later on. I mean, there was always a bit of an issue where people were sort of, even though, you know, they had these massive monsters and stuff, Godzilla was essentially cast as a good monster, you know, readdressing the balance and taking out all these other sort of kaijus and stuff like that. And Kong was, well, these were a bunch of humans who invaded his island and he was just protecting his territories, you know, in that way, you know, he's a good guy as well. So the fact that these two were apparently going to be fighting each other, there must have been something to cause them on this collision path, which led to a lot of people bringing up another Warner Brothers smackdown of superpowered characters, Batman versus Superman, to the point where people were joking about the fact that, you know, they'll stop fighting as soon as they both realize they both know Mothra, to the point where actually there is even a scene in Godzilla versus Kong where Godzilla is nearly out for the count and Godzilla is standing on him with his foot and sort of looking down at him, and they're kind of basically growling and saying stuff to each other, to the point where I bet if you put subtitles on, it would have been something along those lines where, you know, they both know Mothra or they both dated Mothra or something like that. And I mean, I think I saw a few people sort of doing the same sort of meme over the weekend. It was just amazing that they had a scene. I don't know if it was intentional on Adam Wingard's part, but it felt very much like Batman versus Superman in that bit. So, were my expectations met? Yes, from the sort of the fight scenes, from everything else surrounding it. I mean, I would probably give, like, I think I gave a 3-star review in the fact that, you know, if you're going there to see a lizard hit an ape, you'll be immensely satisfied. I think the fight scenes are really well shot and sort of choreographed and stuff like that. The human stuff around it, just a waste of time. I mean, this sort of hollow earth core journey to the center of the earth sort of thing is just laughable. I honestly don't think I could tell you any of the characters' names in the film. I'm struggling to remember which actors were in it. It's just like they were there basically to bring these two characters together, and one wonders if in the future they'll just do away with, you know, the human characters and just have the kaijus and see if that works. I don't know. What about yourself?
Yeah, my expectations were in pretty low. I mean, you know me, I am a huge advocate of the cinematic experience, and something like Godzilla v. Kong is something you think, oh, that's an opening weekend IMAX experience, get the full experience of it all. But this was one of the films out of all the films that are maybe going on to HBO Max this year, compared to the, you know, as opposed to just the cinema release, this was the one I wasn't really fussed about. Any sort of trailers or footage, and I think my such bad experience with King of the Monsters was like, yeah, that's fine. It looks like a computer game. And I'm not one of those people to say that about CGI movies. It just looked like a computer game the whole time. It was like, you know, it felt a fitting home to probably watch something like this at home, which I know is completely sacrilegious, but that's how I felt about the film. And I was the same as you. I was just so bored throughout. Like, the human characters, I could only recognize them going, oh, there's Kyle Chandler. There's that girl from the last movie that I don't really know about. The mute girl was nice. And then you have the really weird podcaster element, which felt so silly. Just like this guy that basically is the Godzilla podcast and he keeps everyone up to date throughout. And I think, what was the other character that really bored me? My mind's gone completely blank.
It was Alexander Skarsgård.
Yeah, he was boring as well. Just everyone about it. The only person that stood out was the guy from Hunt for the Wilder People, because he was the boy from the Hunt for the Wilder People whose voices changed.
Oh, yeah. I find him annoying as well, actually. I find all of them immensely annoying. And, yeah, just unnecessary. It's like, yeah, they were bringing back Kyle Chandler and Millie Bobby Brown from the previous one, but, I mean, they didn't really do much. And it was just like, I mean, and it's one of those other films where it's like, has there ever been a science fiction film or a film like this where the CEO of a tech company has actually been a nice person and hasn't had a hidden agenda? I mean, it's just like, you can tell that they were wrong and immediately, you know, it's like, I own a tech company and we're researching Godzilla. And it's like, you're going to be developing something which is evil, aren't you? And it's like, yes, they are. Of course they are.
Yeah, it's just I'm the same as you. I couldn't tell you the people's names. I can barely remember the plot, or even when I was watching it, I was like, I don't really know what's going on. Why are they going to this part of the... And like, you know, it's pretty bad to admit that, but the film was just, it really lacked any engagement. And, you know, I did not like Batman v Superman, a film obviously parallels can be drawn with, but I was able to go, those are what those characters are doing, that's what they're thinking. Ultimately, there's only so much that you can milk two CGI characters fighting each other, you know, brawling in sort of this weird kind of Japan style nature. It just didn't work at all. It just was a really unengaging film, and I think one of the small blessings of the film was that it was less than 2 hours. And, you know, I part of me expected it to be 2.5 hours when I switched it on.
Yeah, I mean, at least it did buck the trend for these summer blockbusters to be over sort of, but around the sort of 2.5 hour mark. I mean, I really enjoyed the final battle sequence in Hong Kong. I think some of the cinematography was great. I mean, there's a scene where there's the human characters are in these sort of air shuttle things which go all the way to the center of the earth and then come back up again. And when they do, you know, they arrive right in the middle of a fight, and you basically are, it felt like you were in one of those sort of like a Universal Studios ride in one of those sort of machines, which is sort of, it's not a roller coaster, but it's sort of fixed, and it's sort of using VR sort of technology to sort of fly around and make you think that you're going in between the fighting and stuff like that. So I thought, you know, the way that he shot it in the cinematography, and actually it's even certainly by the look of my HD TV, the special effects were certainly of high quality. I thought certainly higher than some other films recently, such as, say, Justice League or whatever. I thought the special effects were great as well. But I mean, yeah, I mean, there is only so much, I think, at that point where, you know, you get onto like the second or third fight between them, it's like, yeah, I mean, two giant things hitting each other ad nauseum. You do need a bit more of an emotional stake in the fight. And of course, then it is a little difficult when the two characters only sort of roar or sort of snarl at each other. You know, there is, I think, an attempt to maybe get a bit of emotion, whatever. But I think what I read was that this was basically done entirely CGI. So there wasn't anything like, you know, like an Andy Serkis or Terry Notary performance capture performance behind this to sort of maybe give a better link to between the characters and the audience. So I think that's maybe where it sort of let itself down in that respect.
Yeah, I just kind of, I think I did come away from it thinking, you know, Kong has a lot more personality than Godzilla. I think I saw a great thing last week where it was like Kong is channeling almost John McClane in terms of his attitude, that he's this sort of everyman slouch that's kind of finds himself in this crazy situation. And, you know, I saw that meme before I watched the film, and it kind of informed my decision. And I felt invested in sort of Kong and hoping he would be a success, where Godzilla really doesn't have much of a personality, that kind of CGI character. And that's why I think he works so much better in the original kind of, you know, Gareth Edwards Godzilla, is because there's so little of him. We can't get bored of like, oh, here you're going, like roaring again, or the atomic breath. Everything had been done to death by this point. There's only so much you can milk out of that character for three movies over kind of 6 hours, I felt. But, you know, Adam Wingard, I think, is an interesting director. You know, I loved his work on The Guest and You're Next. What did you think he brought much to this film? Because ultimately, as you said, it's sort of it's scenes of really boring humans doing human stuff that is not interesting, and probably the rest of it is the effect houses pitching these titans together. Did you think Adam Wingard had much of a personality impact on this film?
I think he certainly did. I think like the fight scenes and stuff like that, I mean, he'd clearly sort of seen what had gone before him and with like King of the Monsters, and basically went to the complete opposite end. So he was using, they either sort of fought in daylight during the sort of ship attack, or they were using like the neon lights and stuff of Hong Kong to be able to, so you could clearly see what was going on. Whereas, yeah, the previous versions, for some reason, they decided to set them at nighttime in a cloudy city and stuff like that, and full of rain, so you couldn't really see anything. So he did pivot with that. I think the cinematography was a lot more fluid, and I think it sort of tracked better in terms... It was shot more like, at times, like an actual choreographed stunt work fight, as opposed to clearly just two CGI characters. Sort of, you know, you've almost got like a sort of game console where you're just sort of button bashing BBBBB B, 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 B or something like that. Or, I mean, even to like, yeah, it was even better than like, was it Rampage, where the Rock movie based on the video game, where the giant ape and giant lizard and all that, were giant wolf were fighting each other. I say, I think it was, yeah, still better than that. But I mean, I'm not sure if he was involved in the script. I'm going to find that out, because if he was, then yeah, I'm not sure about that, because yeah, the script really wasn't up to much. No, he was not involved in the script, so yeah, he wasn't involved. So yeah, I can forgive him for that. He was working with what he had, but yeah, I mean, I think yeah, it was a huge improvement on the previous installment, but. I mean, he certainly made an impact, and it's clearly going to work for him going forward. You know, the fact that he's managed to, you know, revitalize the box office single-handedly with it, you know, it's really impressive numbers given, you know, just, I mean, I know the US cinemas are opening up, and China's basically back almost to normal. So, I mean, to get that kind of money, like about nearly $50 million in the US on a 5-day Easter weekend, where, you know, that's huge given, you know, where we were, where I think it was it Tenet, you know, and Wonder Woman were struggling to get up to about sort of $9-16 million initially. You know, like obviously, you know, Tenet was the savior, it was going to bring everything back. But I think unfortunately, you know we sort of talked about this on the previous podcast where we reviewed that film, where, you know, it was there for cinemas to reopen with when they felt they could. At that point, you know, in July, people thought they could reopen, but I think in hindsight, it was clearly too early. So, you know, but, you know, someone had to be first, and it went first. You know, I guess it walked so Godzilla and Kong could run.
Yeah, I think that's the big takeaway for me is that success. You know, HBO Max streaming services aren't going to kill the cinema experience for a lot of people. And, you know, despite the fact I was quite negative about the film, about how it looked, I would have seen this in the cinema probably opening weekend. And I, if the chance does come, you know, when cinemas reopen, if they're kind of bringing things a little bit forward and backwards, I would maybe go along and give it a second shot, just out of kind of getting back into the cinema and trying to support it. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they potentially roll back this HBO Max deal for films only being exclusive in there and cinemas, etc. You know, if they're making that money now, you know, you see it, like, I think America, where, like, you know, today that every adult will be offered, you know, a date, etc., for a vaccine by mid-April. You know, we're obviously still some way behind, but if you're a June, which needs to make a hell of a lot of money, do you pull back from HBO Max and go all in on the theatrical experience? The Matrix, for example, you know, are they going to get people into the cinemas? It's going to be really hard to say, because there's going to be a lot of films coming out, a lot of blockbusters, your Fast and the Furiouses, your James Bonds, that will be going strictly into the cinema. And, you know, I can't imagine Warner Brothers wanting to pull back from that, especially with the amount of debt that they've got with things like HBO Max at the moment.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to be really interesting, because, you know, for all the, you know, discourse about, you know, streaming and stuff like that, I think it is interesting that, you know, a film which is, I mean, it's all about giving people choice. You know, the fact that it still made like $50 million in the US when it was available to watch at home on HBO Max. And I think HBO Max is it just still subscription only? Is that right? It's like, yeah, everything's involved in subscription. It's not like the Disney Plus model where it's going to be to see what, like, you know, Black Widow does in a couple of months, where it's day and date release, but you've got to pay in America like an extra $30, or here it'll be an extra £20. That sort of thing. It's like, well, I'm just going to wait and go to the cinema. I'm glad that they've pushed that back to July, so we don't have to make that decision. I am surprised, still slightly surprised, that Warner Bros. Didn't hold back a couple of months on this one, like 6 weeks to get it into cinemas. But I understand that by this point they've probably been onto their third or fourth different iteration of marketing, so they couldn't really afford to rebrand and do another load of marketing with another date change. So and I guess, yeah, it's here in the UK, things are always still slightly more up in the air. It's like these dates can be quite fluid and can move around, and there's still no guarantee that you know, things will be open in May. Hopefully, fingers crossed they are. It does look that way, but of course, you never can tell. But yeah, no, it's going to be interesting to see how it goes forward, because, yeah, it's giving people a choice. There will be people who don't want to go back to the cinema yet. There will be people like us, I'm sure, who will be there. I've already booked the 17th of May off, and I'll watch whatever is on in the cinemas. Will I watch Godzilla vs. Kong again? Yeah, I probably would if I've got the time. Depends what's out. I know that, I mean, weirdly, the first film I really want to see on the big screen is Sound of Metal, just for the sound mixing. I really want to experience that on the big screen. But, you know, there'll be quite a few things out. But, yeah, it's you know, people have shown that they're ready to get back to the cinema. I don't think the theatrical experience is over by any stretch of the imagination. I think what is going to be interesting is how this reduced theatrical window is going to play. But, I mean, to be honest, certainly when I was ever at the cinema in Aberdeen, I mean, were people going to see stuff, you know, more than sort of 4 or 5 weeks out? I don't think so. I think you're gonna make the bulky money enough in that opening month that you can afford to then go straight to streaming afterwards. I think it's probably potentially gonna give a more level playing field for small releases, where, you know, there's more opportunity for them to get into the cinemas and into these multiplexes, because the multiplexes won't be beholden to, you know, the latest Avengers movie or a Fast and Furious. You know, they've got a month to screen that on a few screens, and then, you know, they'll bring in something else. So I'm getting quite hopeful. about the future. It's going to be interesting to see how it works and if there's any sort of change to the programming tendencies of these multiplexes. And then I guess for the independents as well, you know, will they be taking risks on you know, these big blockbusters anymore, or will they realize that the money's not in it there because they have less time to make money on them, so they sort of double down on their traditional programming? It's going to be interesting to see.
We are living in exciting new times. So yeah, it's safe to say we are pretty mixed at best on Godzilla, but very positive, hopefully, for the future of cinemas. It's been the first kind of you know, test case really this year, and I think there's probably I think the numbers have blown everyone away at Warner Brothers. I think observers didn't expect anything like this. I think there'll be a lot of people now changing their plans, and hopefully, you know, with the way things are going in America, but hopefully sooner here rather than later, we'll be kind of going back to a kind of normal kind of cinema setup by and large. We might still be separated for a little while. We might still be wearing masks in cinemas, but I'm pretty hopeful, and hopefully the policies come to support these cinemas, the independents, and to support the films getting into the cinemas and the audiences that need to see these films and support them getting the chance to go as well.
Yeah, I just hope that this doesn't mean, and I hope that Warner Bros. And all the other studios don't read too much into the fact that it was Godzilla versus Kong. I think it was just the fact that there was something exciting to see on the big screen. I hope this just doesn't mean we get a slew of versus type movies over the next few years that someone, one of us, clearly says, all right, well, that's what people want to see. They want to see two sort of, you know, franchises go head to head and stuff like that. And, you know, we get more Kong versus Mothra movies, or Kramer versus Kramers, but they're a supercharged Dustin Hoffman versus Meryl Streep going with hitting each other with Oscars, or, you know, like your Freddy versus Jason's and stuff like that. I hope it doesn't mean that we get sort of people just rehashing old franchises to death in order to try and make some money. It's I don't think it's about that. I think it's about you know, giving people the option to see something at the cinema again. I think, you know, obviously, you know, there's cachet in those two characters and that franchise, but hopefully they don't milk it to death. And it's going to be interesting to see what Adam Wingard does next, because I believe he's tapped up to do a Thundercats movie and a Face-Off sequel / reboot sort of thing. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see that. If it's just John Travolta and Nicolas Cage sort of, but they've swapped the initial roles around and then do it the other way, who knows, maybe that'd be trolling everyone, who knows.
Yeah, so time will tell. It's safe to say with Adam Wingard, it's a hard career to predict to where it will go next, and be the same with cinemas. But we will be back next week, very much after, you know, chatting about Justice League and Godzilla versus Kong. We'll be discussing something all the more different, and we'll be discussing Promising Young Woman and sharing our thoughts on that with Emily Murray. So tune in next week. Thanks very much to everyone for listening. Bye.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.